With markets changing and living costs rising, finding a reliable place to grow your money matters now more than ever. With the Wealthfront Cash Account, your uninvested money earns a 3.75% APY, which is higher than the average savings rate. There are no account fees or minimums, and you also get free instant withdrawals to eligible accounts 24/7, so you always have access to your money when you need it. And when you're ready to invest, you can transfer your cash to one of Wealthfront's expert-built portfolios in just minutes. More than 1 million people already use Wealthfront to save and build long-term wealth with confidence. Get started today at Wealthfront.com. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA SIPC. Wealthfront Brokerage is not a bank. Annual percentage yield on deposits as of September 26, 2025 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. The cash account is not a bank account. Funds are swept to program banks where they earn the variable APY. It's time your hard-earned money works harder for you. With the Wealthfront Cash Account, your uninvested cash earns a 3.75% APY, which is higher than the average savings rate. No account fees, no minimums, and free instant withdrawals to eligible accounts anytime. Join over a million people who trust Wealthfront to build wealth at Wealthfront.com. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA SIPC, and is not a bank. APY on deposits as of September 26, 2025 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. Funds are swept to program banks where they earn the variable APY.
We are a weekly podcast, Soul of a Gamer.
Hey, I'm smart this time.
Let's not go that far, okay?
I will fuck it up again.
I love pressing that button. That was my favorite button. That's...
This game gets really fucking weird.
So you do acid and then you go into the hamster suit.
And this week is...
Night Trap! They're right behind you, Night Trap!
10-year-old birthday party. Next scene, kill the kid.
You got to kill the kid. Sha-la-la-la-la-la, car is coming! Throw your body into the car and die. All I could do every time I was playing Ethan was just would start walking around and go, Jason!
Oh, God.
It's just...
Do I have good inflection now? Is my inflection good now? Am I speaking well? Am I entertaining enough for you all? Am I?
Steven's mad because I told him his videos need more inflection.
I'm being too monotone. I'm speaking too many facts and reading it too elegantly. I need to be like more informative.
I think everyone out there would agree, like, when you're really interested in information, you will take whatever you can get, right?
That's fair.
Right? Like, well, I'm super interested in learning things. So when I hear something I'm interested in, I'm like, you know what? He talks like fucking garbage, but he's giving me some good fucking information.
Right? Yeah.
So we're going to continue listening to this. The only time it bothers me is when the audio is really bad and I'm like, okay, you fucking recorded this with a broken microphone in a bathroom while getting a blowjob. We're not listening to this one.
Which I did fix that. I started using my Shure mic. I was like, I just started holding it while I was sitting on the couch over there.
Yeah. It's rough.
All right. Well, welcome back, everyone. I was recording it on my old tablet.
Oh.
And then using a wireless mic, but I kept on having so many bad problems with that and the audio kept on mistiming and getting off key and stuff like that. And so then people were like saying, like messaging me like, oh, this is AI, lips don't match. I'm like, no, it's not, just really shitty audio.
I promise it's not AI. I would make myself way more handsome if it was AI.
You're reading an AI script. I'm reading a script that I wrote. Yes. Sorry.
I'm confused.
It's a 2-minute long video. I wanted to actually write out my thoughts.
Yeah, asshole. All right, guys. Well, welcome back.
Welcome.
I'm Scott.
I'm Steven. I'm sorry for that little rant right there.
Yeah, what a piece of shit.
I know, right?
And we are Soul of a Gamer podcast. Each week we play a game, we tell you about it, or every other week or something. And yeah, that's it. And we give you a review.
We do. And we love all of you guys on TikTok and Spotify and wherever else you guys listen to us. So thank you.
Faux show. And we hope you enjoyed our last week's hot takes. That was a lot of fun for us.
Yeah, it was.
This week we are doing a more streamlined and popular game, I would say. This is probably one of the most popular games ever made.
Of all time.
It really is, honestly. Like,
yeah, actually.
When you hear the sales numbers, you're going to be like, holy shit, in the 90s?
I'm not going to be surprised, honestly, because it was like the game and the franchise.
For sure.
For sure. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. But first, Steven, what the fuck are you playing this week?
I'm actually pretty excited for this one. I had a new friend of mine in Gillette actually told me, I've been thinking about playing it, Crime
you
Scene
have
Cleaner.
Friends?
I know, I met some people and we actually have hung out a few times. It's fucking wild, right?
We're besties now.
Well, my friend Layra, I was talking about this game and she's like, actually, that game's super great. You should play it. So I gave it a
what
try.
Is her,
so
can you stop, Layra. Stop. Layra.
Layra, yes.
Layra.
Layra, yes.
I don't like it.
I mean, you don't have to. I hate it. It's an interesting
her parents,
name. I've never heard of before, but it
her
works.
Her parents suck unless they're like ethnic. If they're American, I'm going to be real fucking pissed, real fucking
I mean,
pissed.
I'm probably sure they're pretty fucking American, but I'm
oh
I
my
don't,
God.
I don't
you
know
fucking
her
assholes.
Ethnicity or race because I didn't ask. So, I mean.
You have to ask everyone before
no,
I talk
don't.
To you. Are you white? I'm much more judgmental
I'm
on white
I'm not
going to
come up with that question. I'll be like, maybe like. What,
well,
what
for
you,
me, it's like opposite. Claire, it's not because I want to talk to them because they're white. It's because I'm more judgmental on white people. Where I'm like, what do you mean your fucking
suck.
Name is this?
Your name's not Thaddeus as a white person. Come
you
on.
You fucking asshole. What are you, fucking Greek?
I mean, fair. But no, so yeah, Crime Scene Cleaner. It's, you're a... You're used to be a janitor. Your daughter, I think your wife's dead. Your daughter has some crazy illness that she needs treatment for. She lives on this facility to get this treatment. You're having to pay like $20,000 a month, $1,500 a day is what they said they're going to keep adding on to it at some point. And so like over 30 yeah. grand a month. And you end up becoming a crime scene cleaner for mob boss, the biggest mob boss in town. You end up cleaning for one of his crew members on accident, and the mob boss finds out about you, and he's like, wow, you actually cleaned that place brilliantly. Like, you're going to be my cleaner, or I'm going to kill you. So, you're my
he's
cleaner,
like, how
right?
much you paying? A dollar a day.
He pays like $5,000 to $6,000 per job.
Yeah, yes.
Sometimes to. 3 to 5 bodies, but you know, I mean, it's a lot of cleaning. I mean,
dude, mob guy, stick at the 2. 3 is too many,
but
at least move them.
Of the cleaning simulator games, honestly, this one is so fun. And the story is actually pretty decent so far.
Well, normally with like simulator games, you don't really get a story. You just get like an action and that's what you do.
Yes, but this one actually has a story. And like you actually have characters and voice actors like talking. And like you'll go into these crime scenes and you'll like pick up a body. And he's like, ah, this guy's got a tattoo of BP. So it's either for Patrick Bateman or Boulder Psychos, that gang that just moved in. Nah, probably the Boulder Psychos thing. Or
why would you go? Why wouldn't you just say this guy's got a tattoo of BP? I don't give a shit.
I mean, he does do that sometimes too. Or he'd be like, some like mob boss's daughter committed suicide because the guy she fell in love with was gonna use her for sex trafficking, like taking her hostage and making her a sex slave. And then the mob boss comes and kills the guy, but then she's so depressed that she ends up killing herself, and you have to clean up the entire site, and you're like, you find
my
the daughter,
God.
And you're just like, oh my God, what did I just walk into? She's just like in the bathtub, slit wrist, the pool, and you have to clean up the body. You're like, I don't even know the mob boss knows about this, but I guess they got to clean up this body too.
Can you get caught by the police while you're playing? I guess
no, not that I've seen.
Okay.
It seems like you're just
so
like
you just do a good job and you're like, yep,
yeah,
they never found out.
Yeah, you can do a shitty job cleaning, and I don't know what happens if you do a shitty job cleaning. I know you get paid less, but I don't know if there's actually other consequences. It'd
yeah.
be really funny if
they
was.
Found one of your hairs on the body, asshole. You're going to jail.
But it's a really fun game to even try to get 100% on the achievements for, because like a lot of them, it's just like 100%ing the cleaning of the room, and I'm like. Or finding all the secrets, which there's a lot of crazy secrets. And you'll like uncover someone's phone. You'll see the text messages. Like one of the craziest ones that I just went to, this guy, this hacker was like looking on the housing market. And the housing market is crazy right now. So I went and I found this house that I liked. And then I bugged and hacked into all their equipment and stuff in the house. And then I've been making them feel like it's haunted. And the woman, I didn't know she was crazy. She's actually taken like psychosis pills, but she stopped taking them because I made her feel so crazy that she thought her son was possessed and she murder suicide everyone in the house. And I'm like, what the And he's like, can you go clean that up? I'll pay you $6,000. And I'm like, what the fuck is this game, dude?
Great idea. Yes, I will clean that up.
Well, and then like he made the Roomba go in a pentagram pattern. And because she killed herself in the kitchen, the Roomba made the pentagram pattern with the blood after she died too. Oh, so God. I walk into the kitchen, I'm like, what the fuck, dude, this is gonna take forever to clean.
You
but like
assholes.
Each mission's only like an hour long, honestly, and there's so many different things. You have to like pick up trash, rearrange the furniture, put everything back. You have to clean with sponges, mops, pressure washers. Like, it's got all this crazy, like, it's got skill trees and stuff. Like, it's way more in depth than I thought it would be, and I'm way too enthralled in it, to be honest.
All right. Maybe I give it a try at some point.
It's on Game Pass.
Oh, it's on Game Pass.
Yes.
Ooh, wonder if it's on computer Game Pass.
Yes, it is, I think. Oh, I'm pretty sure. So, check it out.
Well, I've just been continuously playing...
Dragon Age? Or
no, Baldur's Gate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to finish it finally. I got past the House of Hope. I got past the Asterion storyline.
Oh, nice.
Like, I'm just trying to like really finish up shit. I found the prison where they're keeping Duke Ravengard and the Omulon.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Can't remember his name, but I decided I didn't want to do it yet. I always say before I go into things that say you should not come in here unless you're ready for this.
Yes.
And I go and I'm like, six turns and I don't know what I'm doing. Let's hold off.
Just mad sprint through it and just
that's what I've seen and I think I'm gonna prep by doing like the trying to remember. Someone suggested taking one of the hirelings and casting that spell that gives you extra movement speed.
Oh, haste or
not haste.
Oh, no,
another
the
one.
I know which one you're talking about. The freedom of movement.
Yeah, something like that. So, yeah, I'm probably going to do that. There's a lot of stuff I want to do before that anyway. I'm trying to finish up all these missions that I just have lingering around.
That's fair. Have you finished the game at all yet?
No.
Oh, so this is the first time finishing?
Yeah. I'm about to go fight Orin the Red, which I already did in my first playthrough. So I already know how to beat her. It's nice. So, you know what's weird is I heard that she randomly kidnaps someone each playthrough.
Yes.
Right? But for me, the last two playthroughs, it's been Lazelle.
Okay, if you so it picks someone in your party randomly. Like for me, it was Gale. If you talk to the little kid when
Gale
you enter the first,
sucked.
Yeah, Gale sucked. If you talk to the little kid when you first enter the town, and like the one looking for his mom, and you help him and you take him to the base, she'll actually turn into or like kidnap him and turn into him. So that can happen too. That happened to me my first playthrough. Where
oh,
she was actually,
I did. He's in my base right now, hanging out.
Okay, yeah. So the first playthrough for me, she actually took the kid. The second playthrough took Gale. Another playthrough took Lazelle.
Lazelle for me last two times. I would hate to lose Gale because I use him for like random shit all the time.
Yeah,
I don't keep him as a main party member, but I'll like grab him. I'm like, okay, I need someone who can cast greater invisibility on me so I can do this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. No.
All right,
It was a fun one though. Once you get to the end though, definitely do all the epilogue stuff. Like, one of my favorite things is there's a treasure chest at the end. They added this not when you first beat the game.
We talked about this.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But that chest where you get to find all the letters of everyone you like encountered and talked to and stuff. Like they'll write you letters and like it's just such a cool thing to like be like, oh shit, yeah, I fucking helped that guy back in Act One. That's really cool to know like where he's at now. Oh, that druid made her own shop. That's fucking sweet.
Nice.
It's a fun little quality of life thing that I just really enjoy.
For sure. All right. Well, let's jump into this.
Yes.
We are doing today first generation Pokemon.
Yes.
That
Pokemon
is
red, blue,
green,
yellow,
green? And blue and yellow.
Yes.
Green, it was a Japanese release only. You'll see why.
Ah, okay, okay. I was wondering about that one.
Yeah. All right. In the quiet suburbs of Western Tokyo, in a town called Mashita, a young boy named Satoshi Tajiri spent his childhood chasing bugs. He loved wandering rivers, forests, and hills in search of insects and fish. He would take his creatures home, study them, and think of clever new ways to catch more. Okay. One of the best tricks was to place a stone under a tree during the day. Beetles were nocturnal, and they liked to sleep under stones. Hmm. By nightfall, Satoshi would return, lift the rock, and collect his prize. Thanks to this strategy, he would catch more bugs than all of his friends. His skills even earned him a nickname. What's his nickname?
Ash Ketchum?
No. That'd be a funny one, though. A Dr. Bug. That's a terrible
okay,
nickname.
That makes sense.
What a fucking shit nickname. Leave it the fucking kids to be like, no, you're like a doctor of bugs.
He's a Dr. Bug. He's like a scientist with his bugs. He's a Dr. Bug. Ha ha.
Look at this guy and his fucking bugs. What a fucking loser. Maybe they were insulting him. Who knows?
You like playing with your beetles? You like playing with stink beetles, I bet, because you stink.
Years later, Satoshi told Time magazine that if he hadn't gone into games, he would have probably been making anime. He loved the world of manga and shows like Ultraman, which captured his imagination as much as the insects he studied. Which Ultraman, guys, if you don't know, if you've never seen Ultraman, it is the worst fucking
never
TV
watched
show.
The movie or TV show. I want to, but I've seen like clips of it.
Ultraman is just it's kind of dumb, and they keep remaking it over and over. Yes. Up until like the early 2000s, I want to say. It just wasn't very good in my opinion, but I tried to watch it and it just was not good.
270s. I mean, the first Japanese Spider-Man TV show, which actually came out even like before Power Rangers, like back in the 70s or whatever,
yeah,
was basically Spider-Man as a Power Ranger. He even had a Megazoid fucking Voltron creature.
Yeah. Because he needs one, because he sucks as a superhero.
No, he fucking doesn't.
He needs a robot, goddammit. He's defending New York from kaiju.
It's time your hard-earned money works harder for you. With the Wealthfront Cash Account, your uninvested cash earns a 3.75% APY, which is higher than the average savings rate. No account fees, no minimums, and free instant withdrawals to eligible accounts anytime. Join over a million people who trust Wealthfront to build wealth at Wealthfront.com. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, and is not a bank. APY on deposits as of September 26, 2025 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. Funds are swept to program banks where they earn the variable APY.
No, he's finished Japan because he's Japanese Spider-Man.
Oh, Tokyo.
And he was a professional motorbike person.
Okay, that fits the story that we have here, actually, perfectly. I think that's cool. Verbatim.
Nice.
In the late 1970s, Satoshi found another passion, arcades. He was captivated by Space Invaders, which I,
hell
you know,
yeah.
It's always funny to me when these people are captivated by the fucking shitty escapes.
Dude, Space Invaders was fucking awesome.
I know, but
then
that's
though.
All they had, so they didn't have anything to compare it to, but it's like, man, that game sucks. Like, what are you talking? You're captivated by that game.
I mean, it was Space Invaders or Missile Command or Dig
Dug.
Yeah,
well, Missile Command, actually, I could see Missile Command because it's
Missile
kind
Command
of interesting
was
and fun.
Awesome, dude.
Yeah, see, Missile that Man. Game was actually kind of fun, and it was kind of dumb, but still fun. It had that little fucking ball you rolled around. Like,
comment below if you're a Missile Command lover, because I need to see some other Missile Command activists.
Yeah,
because
that
there.
Was one of the cool. Even they would make Flash games in the early 2000s
Fuck
for
yeah,
Machine,
dude.
Missile Command, because it was so much fucking fun.
It was.
But something captivated by Space Invaders, yeah. But something bothered him. Unlike manga or anime, there was no real media for video games.
Fair.
So he took matters into his own hands. In 1983, he created a magazine called
Pokey Life.
Oh, Steven, how do you go Pokey Life? This is such an obvious one.
Arcade lover.
Game freak.
Duh. Okay, you know what? You could shut your face right now. I should have thought of that, but I didn't.
So that was actually his pen name was Game Freak, and that's how they came up with the name for the.
I thought that was a newer thing. I didn't know that was an older thing.
Yeah, that's literally
I knew, like,
the
magazine, but I didn't ever think put two and two together. Honestly, that's stupid. That was very stupid.
The magazine was handwritten and stapled together, filled with secret tips and tricks for beating arcade games. It sold for 200 yen, about $1.75, and one issue sold an incredible 10,000 copies.
Handwritten, fuck.
Yeah, like, so, and not just handwritten, he would illustrate, draw pictures in there and shit too. Like, he really wanted to be a manga artist, I think, in his like life.
Now, did he handwrite one and then print copies, or was they all handwritten?
I don't actually. I'm guessing he had to do copies. If he handwritten 10,000,
like 10,000, yeah. So
they
much.
Made it really like. But the original, even handwriting one fucking magazine. Oh my god! That
oh,
would take,
seriously though,
like
an like entire
weeks,
magazine, that's
right?
Crazy.
Months.
Yeah, I mean, if it's
and
like
he would
most,
did that for like 20 issues or something.
Probably what, like 50 pages, 25, 50 pages on most.
Yeah,
magazines?
Probably. I tried to find them online because I was like, okay, let's see what they look like, and I'm you just curious. Get pictures of like random pages.
Yeah.
Nobody owns them, it seems like. I don't know where you could possibly find one today, but I would love to get my hands on a copy of that.
Fair. Let us know if you know where to find it, or if you can post some of those pictures below.
One of those issues found its way to illustrator Ken Sugimori. He liked it so much that he offered to become the magazine's illustrator. The partnership eventually led Ken to become a primary character designer and art director for Pokemon.
Nice.
Satoshi and Ken often talked about how games felt too similar. They wanted to make something that stood out. Their magazine grew in popularity, and soon professional game developers began reading it too. Taijiri later recalled, "Pretty soon, I had some contributors, and we'd all get together and talk about games. The more I learned about games, the more frustrated I became because the games weren't very good." See, I told you, they knew then too.
Fair.
I could tell a good game from a bad game. My conclusion was, let's make our own games.
Hell yeah.
At the same time, Satoshi was watching his hometown change. Mashita's forests and fields gave away to suburban development. Remember, this is west of Tokyo, and it's not very far west of Tokyo.
Okay.
Yeah. He worried that children would no longer get to explore nature as he had. This idea planted the seed of Pokemon, a way for kids to go on adventures and catch creatures just like he once did.
Nice.
Satoshi didn't think too much could be done with arcade games, but in 1989, he saw the Game Boy for the first time. He noticed its link cable and imagined creatures crawling back and forth between systems. When he saw the success of Final Fantasy Legend on the Game Boy, he thought an RPG for the console could work brilliantly.
That's awesome. Actually,
isn't it?
Like, that's really cool. I love the idea of the bugs crawling through the link
cable.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, well,
like,
and they
that's your
remember
trading, but crawling through
it's
it.
Funny because there is a commercial from the 90s where they showed the Pokemon crawling on a clothesline in between buildings.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and that was to represent the link cable, which, I mean, he probably wrote that fucking commercial.
I mean, fair. That's awesome, yeah. Though. Okay.
Game Freak soon transformed from a magazine into a gaming company. In 1990, development on Pokemon officially began. The project started, and I didn't include this in here. They were working, because I wanted to stick it to Pokemon mostly. They were working on other games and projects at the time, doing like solo work too, just to keep the lights on. But.
Fair.
Like they were working on Pokemon this whole time, but they had other things going on too at the same time. Just so you guys know.
Fair.
I do know that. I just didn't put it in because it didn't seem relevant to Pokemon.
Fair.
The project started with a concept pitch. Or sorry, a concept pitch document full of design sketches and gameplay ideas. Originally called Capsule Monsters, the name came from Capsule Toys or Gashapon and the Capsule Kaiju of Ultraman. But the similarity got them in trouble with Ultraman's creators, so the name was changed to Pocket Monsters, later shortened to Pokemon.
Nice.
Yeah, it was originally Capsule Monsters, though, which makes a lot of sense with the Pokeballs, because they kind of look like capsules.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah. The early concept was very different from what Pokemon became. Inns were included, like traditional RPGs. Shopkeepers would sell Pokemon. There was even a charisma stat, gold values for each Pokemon, an intelligence stat for the Pokemon, and the option to sell Pokemon for money.
That's awesome.
It's way different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Trainers themselves were meant to fight alongside their Pokemon. Early artwork showed a protagonist with a whip and a tough look. Ken Sugimori recalled, "At one point, the protagonist would fight as well, but then we asked ourselves, if you can fight on your own, what's the point in having Pokemon?"
So, Ni no Kuni, though. I mean,
Yeah. Similar.
Yeah.
Bit by bit, the focus shifted towards collecting Pokemon instead of traditional RPG battles. As Ken later said, "When we were writing the text for the Pokedex, we started talking about how fun it was to collect Pokemon. We felt a story about a boy traveling to fill up his Pokedex was more appropriate for modern times than a tale of a hero battling an evil villain."
Okay.
Yeah. An early map of the Kanto region appeared in the pitch document, with landmarks based on real locations. Pallet Town itself was based on Satoshi's hometown of Mashita. Even the Pokeball was different at first. Its colors were reversed, and the button was located on the bottom.
Okay. Isn't that kind of how they ended up making Voltorb? It was from that base design or something like that? Or one of
maybe.
The...
They didn't talk about that, honestly. I'm okay. guessing Voltorb was one of the later... I don't know how he passed the test to be...
Okay.
This is an interesting one, you know?
Yeah.
Fair. They do talk about a couple things, too. Like, the Kanto region is based on the real Kanto region, so a lot of the landmarks, like the Ghost Tower and the market in Celadon City... are based on real places in the Kanto region, because Mishita's in the Kanto region as well.
That's cool.
Designing the Pokemon was an enormous task. Ken Sugimori and Atsuko Nishida were the early artists. Nishida designed the three starters and Pikachu, while Ken finalized every design, drawing multiple angles. So he would get a design, draw them from behind, draw them from the front, draw them from each side.
Yeah.
And he'd do that for all the Pokemon. So and they had over 200 that they originally... Yeah. Yeah, over 200 they originally did.
Dang, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. Which I guess I should have just waited. They sketched over 200 Pokemon, but only 151 would be sketched. Junichi Masuda explained that popularity polls helped determine which design survived. The first three Pokemon created were...
Oh, God.
I'm going to give you a guess.
Okay, wait. Isn't it
Rhydon? I'll give you a hint. It's all based on dinosaurs.
Okay. So Rhydon, right?
Yep. Rhydon's one.
He was the first, if I remember right. The first created. And then, oh God. Is it Charizard and Bulbasaur?
Nope. Clefairy, which I think was supposed to be like a caveman, because the design looked very different.
Okay.
When they first looked at it. And Lapras.
Oh, okay. Lapras makes sense.
Like another dino, because they really like kept... And the reason for this, and I'll just go ahead and read it here. At first, battles were boring with only strong and weak Pokemon. Midway through development, the team introduced types, which not only balanced gameplay, but also inspired more diverse creature designs.
Yes.
So the reason they have so many creature designs is because originally they just had strong and weak.
Interesting.
There was no evolutions. You wouldn't evolve. You'd catch a strong dinosaur type and that would just squash a fucking like...
weak type.
Weird insect looking one.
Oh, okay.
And they were like, well, this is really stupid. Why do we even have weak ones in here if they just get dominated? Like, what is the point in all this?
No one's going to capture the weak ones at some point once
exactly.
word spreads enough. Yeah.
Well, in the document, too, they explain, like, you could trade, like, five of these guys for one of these dudes.
Mm.
And the one of these dudes is cooler because you can catch 20 of these guys just, like, hanging out in this area.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it's just interesting because they would do like more big trades. So you would trade multiple of the same kind of guy for one other guy.
Okay.
It was just, it's an interesting way to do it. And I could not imagine that working very well.
No, I can't either. I definitely, the type system is what makes Pokemon, I feel like, a lot.
Yeah. Early sketches also showed Pokemon hatching from eggs. Designing the creatures and their moves took 3 years.
Dang.
So. Literally, the eggs were introduced in Gen 2, but they knew they wanted it to happen before the games were even made.
That's fair.
This is some stuff they just knew. But yeah, designing all the creatures. So they designed the creatures first and then fit the moves afterwards.
Okay.
Because they're like, okay, we're going to do it like this. We're going to take the move sets, look at the creatures and how they look, and then we'll pick moves based on how they look. So with Hitmonlee, you could imagine they look at him and they're like, well, he looks like he's going to be kicking a lot. Let's give him some kick moves.
So we're going to make Hitmonlee Bruce Lee.
Yep. Yeah. But stuff like that was really funny because you'd think they'd almost have the entire concept designed in their head before they put it down. But really, they did not have any movesets at that time. And
makes sense. And that's a good way to probably do it because designing the characters first makes it so each one is more unique, at least.
For sure. And then you can really focus in on like, okay, well, we'll have the same movesets for a lot of guys, but maybe some get unique ones, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The team itself was tiny, just 9 people.
Dang.
Junichi Masuda later said, we could hardly be called a company at that time. We were just almost like a college club or something, where people who were interested would just gather and hang out. They'd come to work whenever they want, leave whenever they want. Some people would be sleeping over because they work so hard into the night.
Sounds like my kind of job.
The Game Boy's link cable became central to the vision. Taijiri wanted communication and cooperation, not just competition, but trading was difficult. The system could only handle tiny amounts of data. Taijiri also struggled to find a way to get people interested in trading. Nintendo suggested creating two versions of the game, so this is not a Game Freak idea.
Okay.
Yeah. And Mario creator Shigeru Miyamoto encouraged them to make exclusive Pokemon in each version.
Fair. So,
Tajiri also made sure Pokemon battles avoided the idea of death. He explained, "I think that young people playing games have an abnormal concept about dying. They start to lose and say, 'I'm dying.' It's not right for kids to think about the concept of death that way. They need to treat death with more respect." Which I agree. I actually kind of agree with that.
A bad way to do it. And
yeah, and like we do have an obsession with death that's really negative or really not serious enough. It's negative, but not serious, right? We don't think of dying as such a serious thing when in reality, you know, that's the end of life.
I mean, look at how popular true crime shit is.
Yeah.
Popular serial killers are. Mm-hmm. You know, make tons of movies and stuff about them.
Yep. Development wasn't smooth. The game was built on a Unix computer, which Unix is terrible.
Oh, okay.
Systems that often crashed. After one especially bad crash, the team scrambled to learn how to recover the data by reading manuals and consulting experts. They succeeded, but it was a close call. They almost lost 4 years worth of data.
Fuck, that'd be awful.
In a single
God
crash.
Damn, no.
And they didn't have backups.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm like, why wouldn't you fucking back this up everywhere you can?
I'd be always terrified. I'd have backups on top of my backups. I'd probably have
exactly. Yeah. It's just so funny. They're like, we fucked up.
But also possibly the money to have the backups they didn't have.
No, you just throw it on a floppy disk back. I guess floppy disks were small. I don't think Pokemon was a very big game.
That's fair. But I mean, floppy disks weren't also that cheap back then either, depending on.
I guess, but still cheaper than getting a whole new computer.
Cheaper than losing 4 years of work.
Yeah. Junichi Masuda composed all the music on a Commodore Amiga. God, this is just so old.
Yeah.
The Game Boy only had 4 sound channels, which I cannot believe.
Yeah.
So he had to push its limits to make memorable tunes. Like literally, he would say, like, you would have to write all the code to write all the music to make it sound good. Cause he's like, I had like 5 notes I could play with pretty much. And that's all
I
got.
No.
Like, by the mid 90s, there were doubts. The Game Boy was 7 years old. Nintendo didn't believe the game would sell, nor did they fully understand it. Game Freak themselves never planned on releasing it outside Japan, since many didn't think, and I don't know where this comes from, but many didn't think Japanese RPGs could succeed abroad. Selling even 1 million units seemed like a dream. So, like, I don't understand that. I guess
just
Japanese RPGs were weird.
Because we didn't have a bunch of crossovers like we do now.
But we
like,
did. We had all the Final Fantasy games. Those were coming out concurrently in Japan and the U.S., which I believe is made by a Japanese company.
That's fair, but was it? I mean, like, even that, though, wasn't in every household, because I didn't play Final Fantasy until I was, like,
no, because Final Fantasy VII was one of the most popular selling games in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those popular selling games, but that doesn't mean everyone even had games, even, still.
I guess that's true, but still, I don't know where that...
Maybe. I don't know. Where, I mean, it is.
I don't know where
weird,
that like
but...
thing. Yeah, dude, I have no idea where it came from. Because other games like, God, what is it called? That that one you really like? It's Final Fantasy adjacent. Dragon something.
Like one that's called Dragons.
Yeah, you said you played it all the time when you were a kid.
Dragon's Lair.
Dragon Quest.
Dragon. I never played Dragon Quest.
I thought you said told me you did.
No.
All right. Well, Dragon Quest was really popular too, I feel like, and I think that was a Japanese.
I want to try Dragon Quest though, because I've heard
it's
really good.
I think it's actually inspired by European stuff though, so maybe that's where that
Maybe
they like have to really push the Japanese part of it out for it to be popular back then.
Maybe.
Yeah. On February 27th, 1996, Pokemon Red and Green were released in Japan. The Game Freak team visited stores to see how it was doing. They actually sent the entire team out to different stores in Japan just to see if people were buying it.
I mean, fair.
Which I thought was funny.
To do it.
Sales were steady, then strong, and soon deposits from Nintendo showed just how well the game was selling. Newspapers began covering it. Kids everywhere were playing, trading, and talking about Pokemon.
That's awesome.
Junichi Masuda later said, "It wasn't until later when you started seeing, okay, there's going to be an animated series. oh, there's going to be a card game. Now there's a manga weekly publication.
Seriously.
When those things expanded into multimedia things in Japan, we really started to feel like, oh, wow, this is a big deal.
It's huge. Like,
huge. The success of Red and Green led to Pokemon Blue, made for a magazine subscription service in Japan. So you had to be a part of this magazine in order to get it.
Dang, okay.
Yeah. That's crazy. It fixed bugs, updated graphics, and became the basis for the international versions. And it's funny because they showed the original designs in Red and Green, and they are very different for some of the Pokemon.
I've heard that.
Yeah. They look very, they don't look as clean.
Mm-hmm. So. Even Yellow, they updated stuff too, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a lot for Yellow, actually. They just, they
some
did
of the
that
sprites
mostly
and stuff
for,
they made look better.
Yeah.
Like Zubat, I heard, was better in Yellow.
Yeah, they didn't change. They changed Pikachu as well to be more like the Pikachu in the anime. They just changed it to fit the anime more rather than changing it to
For sure.
Be a better game, which is stupid, but whatever. The colors changed too. Junichi explained, originally it was kind of based on how people feel about and view different colors. The clearest split for us was between red and green. But when we started talking about abroad, it was clear that wasn't the case. In America in particular, it's red and blue that are considered opposites.
We're almost wearing red and blue right now.
Yeah,
actually.
Well, and that's opposites here. But in Japan, it's red and green that are opposites.
Yeah, red and green is too synonymous with Christmas. I think we'll never be looked at as an opposite because of that.
Yeah, but in Japan, it is. That's why they did the red and green release.
For sure.
So,
yeah.
Localization was another hurdle. Japanese text took up less space than English, and the cartridges were already nearly full. The team had to make tough adjustments to fit everything in.
Oh, okay.
But Pokemon's popularity only grew. By 1997, the game had outsold Final Fantasy VII in Japan with 3.65 million copies sold.
Jesus.
In 1999, the U.S. sales reached 6.1 million.
Jeez.
So
we don't think it's gonna be popular in America. It's double the popular in America. Okay, that's cool.
It's not. I wouldn't say it's double. There's more people in America. That's
well, you said 3.7 and 6.1.
Yeah.
About double the amount of copies sold. That's why.
Yeah. Because there's more people.
Yeah. I mean,
worldwide, the total climbed to 31 million.
Damn.
Be lucky to sell 1 million copies. That's what Nintendo told them. This is why Nintendo's a shitbox.
You want to rethink that, Nintendo? Oh, okay. Yep. Well, we're going to make this an entire life now. Don't worry.
Yep.
It's going to be right up there with Mario and Zelda.
The games were massive, but merchandise made even more money. Cards, toys, shows, and clothing turned Pokemon into a global cultural phenomenon. From Dr. Bug to arcade gamer to magazine maker to visionary game developer, Satoshi Tajiri gave the world a new kind of adventure. Yeah. Pokemon allowed children to explore, collect, and connect, just as he once did when he lifted a stone under a tree to find beetles sleeping beneath it.
Crazy.
And then I want to give a special thanks to that guy, Glenn. He made a great video on this that I watched that was very informative, and I got a lot of my information from that video.
Nice. Shout out to you. But no, that's some crazy information. And honestly, like, coming from just the dream of catching bugs to being like, I need a game where I catch that feeling.
Being
of
possibly being the most successful gaming company of all time.
Ridiculous. And
God.
One of the most successful franchises, especially with all the extra merchandise.
I mean,
ever.
We're at 96. We're almost at 30 years of Pokemon at this point.
And I mean, my wife crocheted all of those Pokemon because we love Pokemon here. She's getting really good at crocheting shit, though.
Like, yeah, nice.
Crazy shit.
All right, well, let's jump right into our next little thing.
Yes. All right, best and the worst.
All right. For clarification, I have played every Pokemon game. Steven played Pokemon Yellow for this one.
Yes.
So we might have some different views on this because Pokemon Yellow was kind of a unique in the first generation.
And I have played Pokemon Red once before. I don't think I played it all the way through. But I've played part of Red and Yellow. I mainly started with Heart Gold was the first Pokemon game I started with, and I've played almost everyone since. But
gotta give some love to the OGs.
So I want to say, like, definitely having just 151 Pokemon is such
That's
a
so
tighter,
nice.
More manageable Pokedex to get to. I know you still had to trade to get some, and you had to do some glitch to get like Mew and stuff like that. But
yeah.
the fact that it was a more obtainable goal, like going into some of these ones with 900 Pokemon, I'm like, there's no fucking way I'm going to spend the time to catch all these. This is ridiculous.
Nope. I agree. You know, my thing with Pokemon always, like, I love the amount of Pokemon in there. 151 is great. Yeah. I love the fact that if you're just, if it's your first time playing, you're going to talk to every single person and realize that 99% of them do not tell you shit.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I think that's kind of funny. I love the little nuances. You know, in Japan, in the original version, the guy who's on, who's blocking the path onto Pewter City is drunk off his ass. Okay. And they're like, can you go like, hold on and let him sober up a bit before you come past this? And when they switch it to America, they're like, oh God, I can't wake up without my coffee. Like the stupidest thing in the world. But I love that in the original, it was just some drunk guy blocking the path. He couldn't go forward. And then that drunk guy then showed you how to catch a Pokemon after. Just, that's hilarious. I mean, the game itself is really good, and there's a lot of cool things in there, a lot of cool strategy. Love the typing, love the Pokemon they made in the first gen. I do feel like it's a little restrictive in those first couple towns. You don't really meet.
For sure, yeah.
Like, the most adverse Pokemon you probably meet are rock-type Pokemon. Otherwise, you're in a lot of flying and normal.
Which, I gotta say, like, especially playing Pokemon Yellow, going against Brock for your first fucking boss or trainer was fucking awful. Like, I mean,
it's not too bad. You just catch a Mankey or a Nidoran, and they learn double
kick. I mean, I caught a Nidoran. I didn't catch a Mankey till after Brock. I didn't catch a Mankey till
if you go to
like
the left
Moon
of you go to the left of Viridian City, there's a little patch of grass, and there's a chance to fight your rival, and there's Mankeys in that patch of grass.
Okay, maybe I didn't go to that patch of grass enough then.
Yeah, but you fight your rival for the first time there, or second time, I guess. But
yeah, I got the both Nidorans, so I was able to at least battle him with that. So
it'd be easy. You know, and it's just one of those things. Like, they made originally the game with the Squirtle, Bulbasaur, and Charmander because of the Brock fight for your first one. They wanted to give you an upper, even the fire-type moves hit a little bit differently. They do have a special stat in this game that doesn't quite do anything, I think.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's like a dead stat. Like, they tried to, they really did try to make it cool, and the game kind of came off a little flat with some stat stuff. Like, the critical hit stuff is like weird in the game, too. They've got some weird items that say they increase chances of doing stuff, but in reality, they don't. So there's some worse things like that where it gets a little hard to play the game and really strategize with the items and such.
I did really like the buddy system of Pokemon Yellow, actually having Pikachu like following you the entire time.
Hanging out.
And then you could click on Pikachu and he would like judge you and make faces.
Sometimes
they were
like
adorable and like he was doing good and happy when you were doing good, Chip. But like when you weren't doing good at all, he would just be like, and it's just always fun.
I love Pokemon Yellow because you get to catch all the starters too, or at least get all the starters.
Yeah.
So.
I also do like the slight story tweaks of Yellow actually to mimic the anime. Yeah. I mean, having Team Rocket's Jesse and James show up and then actually having their like Meowth and everything. And then there's some different dialogue changes that also make a nod to the game, which is really fun.
Yeah.
To the anime.
Yeah. You know, the anime was released in America before the game was.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, it was to get people excited for the game coming to America.
I mean, fair. It worked.
Yeah, and it worked. It worked. They're like, these dummies, they watch a lot of fucking TV. We'll get them with this.
Oh, they like cartoons? Fucking,
well,
here
fucking
you go.
Idiots.
Here's
we're
the best
gonna,
one.
We're gonna take all their money out of their fucking wallets, these stupid American idiots.
Nothing's coming close to us until Avatar The Last Airbender comes in.
But there's a lot of good and bad things about the early Pokemon games.
Yeah.
Like you'll get really I will say it's really unforgiving in some parts.
Oh,
like
100%.
There's
it's
a training
very grindy.
Yeah, there's a training grind, unfortunately, very early in the game, I would say. By the second badge, you're like, my guys are not experienced enough to take on this gym. And the gym leaders do tend to have Pokemon that are just unobtainable at that time.
Yeah.
So, like, even, you know, you battle Brock, he has an Onix, you can't get an Onix, not even in Mount Moon, you have to wait until you get to the Dark Cave.
Mm-hmm.
You face Misty, she has a Staryu and a Starmie, you can't get a Staryu or Starmie
fucking
until you get Surf.
Awful to go
against,
dude.
And Lieutenant Surge has a Raichu, which you can get, but also had, like, an Electabuzz and shit.
But also, like, your Pikachu couldn't go into a Raichu if you were playing yellow.
Yeah. So then that's one of the worst things about yellow is just there's an evolution cap, which sucks, and they don't give that Pikachu extra stats. So that Pikachu is pretty much just a shitty Pokemon. I always put the Pikachu away, to be honest, when I play yellow, because it's just, it's not fun to use.
I played him as much as I could, but I ended up swapping him out of so many battles. Like, I would use him against things that he was strong against, like obviously water and like grass types.
And the original Pokemon, and I even think in yellow, you can catch your own, another Pikachu.
But at like, some point, I didn't get to that point.
No, super early in the game. You can catch him in Viridian Forest.
Okay.
They have like a 5 or 10% drop chance.
Oh, it's okay. Like maybe I just didn't see one.
The
then.
Two bigs, you can catch a Pidgeotto, which has like a 2 or 5.
Yeah.
2 or 5% drop chance. And then you can catch a Pikachu, which has a 5 or 10%. And like, then that's really useful. That's the only like type advantage outside of your starter that you get. But in the, there's no point catching a Pikachu unless you just want to evolve it into a Raichu in the Pokemon Yellow.
Okay. But I gotta say the thing that I find the funnest and the best about the old Pokemon games, though, is always picking your name and your rival's name.
Yep.
And this time I went with something really fucking juvenile and stupid.
Scrotum Puncher.
Fucking beautiful. Scrotum Puncher. And I have to read some of these. My name was Bitch.
Yeah.
And my rival's name was Dildo.
Bitch Dildo. Well, you know what's funny is they don't let you do that anymore.
I know, but I love
you can't name yourself Bitch or Dildo because they'll be like, no, we're Nintendo. We don't like bad words.
Yeah.
You're inspiring a culture of hate.
Like, there's one point where on the SS, whatever that ship is, the SS, whatever.
SSN.
SSN, yeah. My rival comes up and it's like, Dildo. Bonjour, bitch.
Bonjour, bitch.
Like, oh god, I died. I was like, what the fuck?
It is so great. The old one is the best for that reason.
Another one, when you go to first pick your Pokemon and Professor Oak tells you to grab the one and then your rival pushes you out of the way, it's like, bitch, I want that Pokemon.
That's good. I know, guys, we're laughing and it's kind of silly, but it's a lot of fun.
And like one of my other ones was Professor Oak when he first points out the ball. He's like, look, bitch, do you see that ball?
Good. Nice.
Or there's another one where he was like wondering why my rival was there. So it's like, Dildo, why are you here?
It's just like, oh no, my parents are visiting. Why is my dildo out?
Like, comedy gold moments in the stupidest of ways. And I am so juvenile for laughing at it.
No, I mean, it'll always be funny. Dude. Like, and the original Pokemon just has a special charm to it, I think.
Like,
doesn't make it good.
I was playing at night sometimes and my wife was sleeping and I would just like be playing and then all of a sudden I just start laughing really loud and I'm like, I'm going to wake her up one of these times with just the stupidest message like, bitch, get out of the way. Like, I'm
move,
like, oh,
bitch.
Like, it's dumb, but it made me laugh every fucking time and I just love seeing it.
Yeah,
it's my favorite part of Pokemon games.
Move on to the first few hours.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this a pretty good pass, actually, for the first few hours. I think this game is entertaining enough in the first 2 hours of just learning about the Pokemon, catching the ones you want, training them up. Like, the grind isn't too much at this point. You almost feel like the grind is fun.
I agree with that. I think yellow is the exception. I think yellow is a little bit more grindy.
Yeah. I don't really like yellow. I play blue. Oh, so.
I mean, if you're playing red or blue, obviously, I 100% agree with you. I think red or blue is the one to start with. I wouldn't start with yellow.
Yeah.
But I think red and blue have it perfect in the first little bit. It's a little bit brutal sometimes, and especially when you're first learning the mechanics. But once you like kind of get a hold of it, it's fucking great.
I want to add one more thing to the best and worst really fast, too.
Yeah.
The worst, in my opinion, is not in the game. It's about the game. So the cartridges, unfortunately, require a save battery. Mm. Now, you can... There are ways to, like, if you need to replace the battery, you know it's running low, and you want to save your save, you can do it. You can transfer your files to your computer and then retransfer them back. It does require you buying extra shit. Again, it's just not worth it. It's just frustrating that you can't have your save forever because the battery will run dry eventually.
Yeah, that's really shitty.
Yeah. But yeah, let's move on. What's our next?
Yeah, I guess next we do Steve Achieves, which obviously there's no achievements for this,
but
there is a bunch of like different things people try to do and different challenges people have done. So I'm going to talk about those instead.
Are you going to talk about what's the one that everyone does?
Ashmo?
No, the, God, what is it called?
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. Are you talking about the Rattata one or whatever?
No, the one where the first time your Pokemon faints, you lose them forever.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I cannot remember that what it's called. They mostly do it in Sapphire and Ruby because Sapphire and Ruby is considered one of the hardest fucking like.
Yeah, that like, one's a brutal. That's definitely a challenge. I can't remember the name of that one. If you know the name of the challenge, please put that down below because that is a interesting challenge for sure.
Yeah.
That challenge is, yeah, specifically, if you have a Pokemon that faints at all, you have to release it.
Yeah.
You
that's fucked up. It's super fucked up.
Always have potions on you and switch out your Pokemon as soon as you think they're gonna die.
No, you can't switch them out. That's the rule in that too. They have
any
Pokemon you encounter, you have to fight with the first one in your party.
Right.
The only time you get to switch out is when you beat them or when you die.
I forgot all the extra rules with it because they do make it like hard. They're like, all right, you like Dark Souls? We'll fucking play this.
Well, then they have a mode where they randomize the Pokemon, so it's even harder. So you never know which fucking one you're gonna be fighting.
Just walk into a fucking little park, and you're like, okay, the first little flower patch. Oh, it's a Rayquaza. Fuck.
Yeah. Literally, one guy had it where he caught his two most favorite Pokemon to start, and he's like, oh, I'm so excited. This is gonna be such a good run. And then he ran into like a Regice, and he's like,
oh,
you've
got to
be fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
Like, and there's
awful.
No way because their stats are just better at that point.
So obviously, one of the things everyone tries to do is catching them all. Try to catch 151 Pokemon.
Yep.
You can get the import of Mew, or you can use the glitch or whatever, and then you can use those ones that you have to transfer.
You can actually catch every single Pokemon in the game. You know that, right?
I think so, yeah. But isn't some of them glitches, though?
Well, yeah. Most of the ones that are in other games are you have to glitch it. But it's not too hard to do it. It's the Ditto way or whatever.
Yeah, and I heard it's not bad to do. So it's really easy for most people. Like, you just have to go through a guide kind of to do it. But
yeah, well, I mean, no, I think anyone could do it. The problem is like saving trainers because you do have to save some trainers in order to do the glitches.
Mm, okay. Yeah. There's one I saw that's called Pika Power, raising your Pikachu to level 100 without evolving. Bonus points but I'm like, that would take a lot of grind to get your Pikachu up there. That's not a fun one to do. There was the Pewter Wall, beat Brock using only Pikachu. Good luck. I hope you're going to use a double team to cheese that fight.
you double team, you leer, and you tackle.
Yeah.
That's all you do.
Ash mode, which this one does sound kind of fun. You try playing only Pokemon that Ash had in the early show. So Pikachu, Bulbasaur, Charmander, Squirtle, Butterfree, and Pidgeotto.
Ugh.
You can have Butterfree.
He had Muk too.
Yeah.
And he had a... Well, then you can never evolve your Squirtle or your Bulbasaur.
Yep.
Charizard's the only one you get to evolve up.
Yep.
But he had a Tauros. He had a lot of Tauroses. So you could use a Tauros. I guess there's a lot he uses or he caught that he never uses.
Yeah, that's true.
Kingler.
But I mean, Ashmo sounds like a fun, unique challenge, especially if you really are playing Yellow and you want to get it as authentic to the anime as possible. You could really do that. There's the perfect rival, just beating a rival every time you face him.
Yep. Hard to do in Cerulean.
Fair.
You should do a lot of grind.
And then, someone said there's a speedrun glitch gremlin thing trying to beat the game in under 5 minutes using warp and the credit skips.
You can. There's a lot of cool glitches in this game because they base everything off of the number system. So everything has every move set has an associated number. Every area has an associated number. And the number is like small. So they only go up to like 200 and something or something like that.
Okay.
So one of the things, you know, the Mew one that everyone does is because Slowpoke and Mew actually have the same identifying number, not the Pokedex number, but their actual identifier number.
Okay.
So when you fight the Slowpoke and do the glitch, it'll make a Mew appear because the numbers are so similar, and the moveset that you use for it, fly or teleport, make it a Mew. Yeah, it's interesting with the number system. It's very, very, very interesting.
Fair.
That's how you get all the random Pokemon too with Ditto. You just have them transform into a certain kind of Pokemon, then use a certain move, and then you're good. Because that the moveset and the Pokemon numbers match. Therefore, the next thing that appears should be like a Bulbasaur.
Okay. That's an interesting concept, actually.
It's just you're cheesing all the weird glitches and code malfunctions. Clearly, they fix those in later games. But the original ones, it was kind of fun doing it.
Fair.
Or the unlimited rare candy glitch.
That's all I got for those kind of like extra advantages or extra game types or extra challenges. But if you have any extra challenges, drop them in the comments. I want to know what all the challenges you guys have done, what things you people have other tried. I know there's, I think you or someone told me about doing a whole team of Rattatas, like a whole.
Yeah,
team.
I've done that before.
Yeah, you've done that before.
It's and actually kind of fun.
There's a bunch of different other challenges. So I mean, everyone can make up their own challenges.
Yeah.
So yeah, let us know.
I mean, and this inspired one of the stupidest things in the world. That stupid Let's Play Pokemon Red or whatever. The Twitch plays.
Think of
the Twitch plays. So like this guy, it was a social experiment where everyone could play at the same time. And so it was really chaotic. And they eventually had to like start a vote mode and an anarchy mode. So in anarchy mode, people would just randomly put in commands to make red move left, right, press A, B.
I do remember that now.
Yeah. So, and one of the anarchy moments that happened was they had a Pidgeot and they had a, it was Pidgeot and someone else, a Charmeleon, I think.
Okay.
And they're going through and at one point they released one of those guys and that was all that was keeping their team together.
Yeah.
It was just so funny.
I also really love the goldfish who played the game. I think it was a goldfish.
Yeah, I could see that.
They had the bowl and they had it corresponded where when he was in certain quadrants, it would do certain buttons. And he actually like went through the game and they had a whole Twitch stream for it. I think they also did that with Elden Ring with him too, actually.
I would not be surprised. I mean, it's just funny that they would do this stuff and like just make it so easy. And with Pokemon, it was kind of easy because it's a really like, it does not make you pay a lot for failure unless you're making yourself pay.
Fair.
So.
All right.
So I will say one of the most annoying things too, I always forget about this.
Okay.
Like in the new games, they don't do this. When you faint all your Pokemon, you lose half of all your money.
Oh.
Yeah. It's one of the most annoying things in this game because you can't farm money that easily besides going to the Elite Four nonstop.
That's awful.
Yeah, so like literally the moment you lose and you had 600,000 yen, it's all fucking gone. But
that's terrible.
Like you're at 300,000 now and you lose again or you're at 150. Like,
no.
Yeah, half is like a really insane, unforgiving number.
That's bad.
Yeah. And they kept that all the way up until Emerald, I want to say.
Damn.
Yeah, it was pretty fucked.
But yeah, next we got the hunt for all the eggs, which again, there's not like actual Easter eggs in this, but I have had some things that some people have pointed out. Pikachu's mood is one that everyone talks about. Depending on how well you treat him, Pikachu's mood changes all the time and you can get different images and pictures and different things he does depending on the mood. So there's lots of different interactions there. I don't know exactly how many there are, but there's more than just a couple. So that's interesting. There's a surfing Pikachu mini game, apparently. I haven't actually played this, but
you have to do the stupid event from, and the event was only available in Japan, I think.
Yeah, and it was event or Pokemon Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a rad surfing mini game on Route 19. So I'll also check that out. Obviously we talked about a couple of the glitches in the game, like the Mew glitch, getting Mew in there.
Oh, I love it. You can get a level 100 Nidoking in the first 4 minutes of playing the game.
Fuck. That'd be nice.
It's the easiest one to catch, too. It's so funny.
There's a ghost sprite glitch. If you trigger the Lavender Town ghost encounter with weird timing, you actually glitch and see broken versions of the ghost sprite, which is actually pretty creepy from what people have said. There's color palette swaps, depending on which Pokemon is at the front of your party when playing on the Game Boy Color, the game changes its color tint.
Oh, that's cool.
So I thought that was really interesting too.
You can also go through all the walls and shit too if you do the Safari Zone glitch.
Oh, okay.
You just walk through the walls and find out that there's nothing on the other side of the walls.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then some people pointed out that some of the trainer tip signs are low-key jokes or just strained, and some of them even break the fourth wall by telling you to press a certain button. Not on the signs, no.
No, you have more on the... You have more stuff, secret hidden shit. There's one that I hear all the time because it's kind of funny.
Go for it.
So there's a lady outside of the dark cave.
Okay.
Who says, I don't know why all these Pokemon are ugly. I wish one was pink and cloud-shaped or something like that. And it was actually, it's an homage. They used that description to create one of the Gen 5 Pokemon.
Dribloom or whatever, maybe?
No, I can't remember. Not Jumploom. It's, that's Gen 3 or Gen 2. Gen 5, it's like a psychic type. It's shaped kind of, it's round and pink. I can't remember what it's called.
Okay, interesting.
You find it in like an abandoned area after you fight the dudes with the monkey, the simian guys.
Okay.
Simian brothers or whatever who own the cafe.
Interesting.
I think that's Gen 5. I think it's black and white.
Oh, I didn't really play black and white. That was another one I didn't really play.
Yeah. Yeah. It I feel like its name sounded like Moon or something.
Okay.
But it essentially they're saying that one was inspired by this one comment that was randomly placed in the game in red and blue.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, that's kind of cool too, actually. But yeah, that's all I got for those. So let us know if you have any other Easter eggs or anything, but I guess, what do you want to give this game for a rating?
You know, I'm going to go ahead and give this a 5. I think this is one of the best fucking games ever made. I think it, like, especially, like, childhood-wise, we all loved this game when we were kids. And people are still fucking playing it today, so clearly they've done something very right. And it only keeps getting better. There's some things in the new one I really didn't like, but still, a lot of the things are really fucking fun. So,
yeah.
I think a 5 is going to be a good number for this.
For me, I was going around 4, 4.5, just because it's still one of the most charming and iconic ways to experience the original Pokemon worlds. And the game is just so fun and unique. But there is still a bit of a grind to it. There is some of those like weird jankiness things. And it's hard for me to give this a 5 when I like, for me, Pokemon X and Y or Heart Gold are like my fives.
You started way too late. That's the problem.
I know. So it's harder for me to give this one a 5, but I do still think this is a must play. Everyone should play through the Pokemon games, but especially a lot of the earlier ones. They are just really incredible, especially seeing where it all started, catching those original 151, playing it kind of like the anime. It's so fun. It's so... Like, honestly, I had a really fun time this last, like, week and a half going back and playing it.
it's so cool. It's such a cool game.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's it, guys. We hope you enjoyed that one.
Yes.
Tune in next week for another Hot Takes.
Yes. We're doing stuff. I can't even remember what it is.
That's okay. We don't have to tell them. They can be surprised when we get there.
It's a surprise.
All right, guys. We'll catch you on the next one. Goodbye.
Love you. Bye.
Hell no.
Fuck yeah!